Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Got each other on our side, plus all the folks at Fried, the Burnout Podcast with Kate Donovan.
Fried fam, if you've been giving everything you've got to your work and are running on fumes, you're not alone. Burnout isn't a failing. It's your nervous system stuck in survival mode, and you can't sustain your energy from that place. That's why we've created Unfried, a 5-month group coaching program that helps mission-driven high achievers like yourself rebuild safety, calm their nervous system, and recover in a way that lasts. When you heal, you don't just get your energy back, you get your mission back. We've got 2 groups of 6 starting October 7th and 8th. Apply now and secure your spot at katedonovan.com/unfried.
You deserve more than feeling constantly fried to a crisp. Welcome to Fried, the Burnout Podcast, where you get the understanding, the community, and the information you need to end burnout for good. I'm your host, Kate Donovan, and all of my work focuses on hashtag ending burnout culture. Outside the pod, you'll find me on stages at conferences giving keynotes, in offices providing corporate trainings, doing virtual VIP one-on-one work, or supporting our group program, Unfried, that is run by my right-hand woman, Sarah Vosen. Both Sarah and I have been through burnout and came out stronger, happier, and more fulfilled. And we want that post-burnout growth for you, too.
Fried fam, I am having a little bit of a fangirl moment. And that doesn't happen a lot in the podcast. You guys know that. You don't hear me say that very often. But today, I get to talk to Mita Malik, who is a changemaker with a track record of transforming culture and businesses. She gives innovative, culturally resonant ideas a voice and serves customers and communities with purpose. She's had an extensive career as a multicultural marketer in the beauty and consumer goods space, being a fierce advocate for including and representing Black and Brown communities. Her first book, Reimagine Inclusion, Debunking 13 Myths to Transform Your Workplace, is a Wall Street Journal and USA Today bestseller. Her highly anticipated second book, and the reason that we're here today that I'm so excited to tell you about, is The Devil Emails at Midnight, What Good Leaders Can Learn from Bad Bosses, which comes out September 30th, 2025. And we want you, the point of releasing this episode when we release it, is because folks, pre-orders matter.
Thank you.
So if you are out there and you have read her work before, or even if you have not, and you're like, wait, who's that? Which is probably not true. You probably all know who she is. Even if you haven't heard of her, look her up now, get the book now, do the pre-order now so that we can bump this next book up to all the bestseller lists too. Mita.
I'm so grateful. Thank you. Thank you for having me. I've been so looking forward to our conversation.
Me too. I'm pumped. All right. So first things first. You have a burnout story.
I have a few. Let's tap into one of them. Well, we talked about, thank you for previewing the book, The Devil Emails at Midnight, What Good Leaders Can Learn from Bad Bosses. One of the bosses that I talk about in this book, her name is Medusa. I nickname all my bosses because it creates emotional distance and space. And you think, well, I could never be that bad of a boss. And up until that point in my life, I had never had anyone scream at me. And I mean, not my parents, not my brother, not my husband, not friends. I certainly didn't tolerate that behavior in friendships. And then I enter the workplace and I'm working for this individual who screams, who yells, who publicly humiliates, privately humiliates, who throws tantrums like a toddler. And she has, in the course of the time I know her, 2 teams of 12 people turn over, and I'm on the second team. And I find out that I'm going to be moved to work for her. And you don't have a choice a lot of times in these large organizations. It's like, yep, you're just a cog in a wheel. And I remember saying, the only thing I could muster was like, she's not an inclusive leader. And they were just so floored that I was being a troublemaker, detractor, pot stirrer. How dare I say I didn't want to work for this person who was notorious? And I will tell you, what happened during the course of that time. I mean, things like, oh, you Indians are all smelly. You have such hard names to pronounce. Why do you wear such basic clothes? And I'm like, you know, I can't afford Chanel like you. You don't pay me enough, right? And like, yeah. And this is the same person who threw her Chanel shoe at a colleague and it hit, missed her head. But it's like the trauma of that story that I forgot. My husband had to remind me. I mean, it was just wild. But what ends up happening is for a period of time, I go to work scared every single day. And that fear motivates me to work really hard, right?
Period, right?
Period, that short period. I'm like, I don't want to be in her wrath. I don't want her to call me on the phone. I don't want her to come into my office. I don't, da, 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 da. And then you get tired.
Yeah.
So then you're like, it doesn't matter what I do. If I send the right email, the wrong email, if I order the wrong lunch and not what she likes, if I, whatever I do, she's going to come after me. And then you start to try to be invisible and fly under the radar. And then I started to just be less and less productive because I'm like, I don't even want to really do any work anymore. And then that just leads to disengagement. And then it leads to me being anxious, me being tired. What I haven't talked about publicly until your show is that I do believe I was drinking excessively. I was in Manhattan at the time at like big beauty company. And I, you know, there was a bar right underneath the building, right? It's in Manhattan, right? So I was anytime, and this was pre-kids, I would be doing happy hour every single night.
Yeah.
And there was a moment that I'm embarrassed to admit, I was like sick from the next day. Like I was still sick because I'm, you know, people say I have a tall Zoom personality, but I'm 5'1" and a half. I'm not that big of a person. I can't hold my alcohol. And the next day I was sick in the bathroom and I'm like, oh my God, people are going to think I'm pregnant, but I'm not. I'm just sick. And it's like, wow. And I had a friend from a prior company have dinner with me. And she immediately said, what is going on? Like she could tell the light from my eyes had just drained. And that is when I started my get out folder, where I was just like, I need to start coming up with the plan to escape this person, which I ultimately did. But that is one of a few burnout stories I have.
One of a few. And this is the one that I have the most notes under.
Also. Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. So, and thank you for reading the book. I know you have got an advanced copy.
So. Oh, yeah. So exciting. And this was, I had the most notes here before I read in your bio that this was maybe a story that you might consider saying on the podcast. So this was separately of that. And here's where most of my notes are. And the thing that I actually like wrote down word for word that it says in the book is after you said, well, she's just not an inclusive boss, which was the kindest possible way that you could say it. The response you got was, why would you say anything? We all know she's an issue. You ruined your chances of a promotion this year.
Yep.
And that's a shot to the heart.
And it is. And I still remember the HR professional who said it. We had been friends prior to that. And after that, I was just, nobody wanted anything to do with me because I said what everyone had been thinking. And that was like, for me to even muster that up at that time in my career, that took a lot of courage for me to even kind of blurt that out in the moment. And I was all of a sudden the problem, not her, but me.
Yeah. And this is the thing that I'm on a pretty big mission to avoid as much blame as possible when it comes to burnout in most cases.
Mm.
But when there is a particular thing that is happening, like if you look at the research into toxic workplaces, there's got to be four components, right? There's got to be harassment, bullying, ostracism, and lack of inclusion. And she does all of those things.
Yes.
And it's to me, it's like, I know so many leaders that are trying so hard to do it well. And I work with so many companies that are really making an effort. Why the hell do we still have a Medusa?
And why are they protected? And I think, you know, I say bad bosses aren't born, they're made, right?
Yeah.
You can be a bad boss in any industry, but there are maybe some industries where we have a track record of creating exceptionally bad bosses. And I think one of them might be beauty. One of them might be like Hollywood. One of them might be, think about a brand that's really hot in the market and everybody wants to work there. And it's sort of like, Mita, if you don't want to deal with this, there's a line of 10 people who will take the job. And so that's part of what happens is you're saying, like, how does this keep going on? Well, it's like scarcity mindset. Like, you don't want the job, someone else will take it.
Yeah. And so this is why I was going to wait to get to this part, but I think this is actually one of the most important things. There's so many good questions in the book and so many good prompts for people to sort of examine their own behavior. I have a tendency to be a gossip girl boss. I know that about myself.
That's good that you know that. That's great.
As soon as I started reading it, my stomach turned and I was like, oh no.
But I love that. I love that you're being vulnerable. We'll talk about, I have many toxic behaviors, but I'm working through, but that's great.
Well,
that's
and helpful. I liked when you wrote about that in the book too, because you weren't like, oh, I've done everything perfectly. And if all of you could just learn from me, that would be wonderful. You were like, no. All of us have moments in our lives that we do things wrong for different reasons. And here's how we can catch ourselves as leaders. Like, you gave a lot of ways of, like, if you're in this, this is how you can catch yourself and sort of unwind it. And you gave a lot of things that said, and this is for the fried audience, this is, you know, a really important bit. If you find yourself in one of these scenarios, here's some things that you can do. Mm-hmm. You can't protect yourself from bullying. It's going to harm you. You can't stay and be protected. But this is where, folks, tip number one, I have been asking you for 6 years to gracefully exit situations that do not support you. And you did this with something that you called a get out spreadsheet.
Yeah.
Can we talk about that a little bit?
Oh my God. My get out spreadsheet when I work for Medusa, I swear to God, I think I interviewed at 55 companies that year or more.
Yeah.
And I'm talking like rounds. I'm not talking like just applied like on LinkedIn. I'm talking like was tracking and that I was going through the process. But part of what happens is, and you talk about this so extensively, like the journey, the path to burnout is different for everyone. I find that there's a moment right before that where you can be making the plan.
Yeah.
And there's like a moment where you're gonna, at least for me, I'm going to go down the downward spiral and start to be the person who will become a person who's not performing on the job, who's irritated, agitated, angry to be there, feels toxic, like she's been wrong
themselves.
And all the things. Yeah. I become toxic.
Yeah.
And so, plan is so important because I take that energy. What's happening is so wrong. I can't maybe quit the next day, right? I had friends who said to me, "Why didn't you just quit?" And I'm like,
"Hi, I have bills to pay,
all sorts of things." And you're like, "Well, no, take that energy." And that's what I did. I made the get out plan.
Yeah.
That's not the first of many get out plans I've had. But it's like, okay, you're upset. Your energy. All right, I mean, to take it and try to go network, meet new people, tell people you're looking. Sit with yourself and think about what do you want to do next and just start, make the plan and work the plan every day.
And like you said, when you get into that like really deep slump, in my book, we call this sitting in the muck. You get to a point where you are not making a plan. You are not implementing a plan. The only plan you've got is Netflix.
Yeah.
Like you're done. You just don't have
anything. Listen, that could be part of the plan to be sort of relief, but a part, not the whole plan. I love it.
And I think that this is where some of the beginning unwinding needs to happen. Like there's so much energy locked up in burnout. It's not that we're totally empty. It's that that energy isn't available to us because it's been squished into boxes by Medusas. Yes. So sometimes we're thinking, oh my God, I have no energy. I'm exhausted. And you are exhausted. But if we could unlock some of those boxes, we could actually find some energy within you that still exists.
Yes.
It's just been shoved down and closed and protected on purpose. That's not a bad thing. No judgment. But it did happen. And we need that energy in order to create these get out plans.
Agreed. Absolutely.
All right. Let's go through some of, we're not going to go through all of the bosses and their names, but some of them are really funny. The thing that I love about this book is it's funny. It's an easy read. It gives you a little bit of a, like, there's a little bit of a giggle as you go along because you're like, you picture the person and you can create it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I want to talk about, because it's really easy to talk about the people who are harassing and doing microaggressions and all. That's like the obvious stuff, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Let's talk about the napper.
Oh, the napper. Yes. Let's talk about him.
The napper. I love this question. How do you, the boss that does not deserve to still have a job?
He doesn't. And I'm telling you, years later, I'm still like, how did they not have them move on? And he slept in every meeting. I'm talking small meetings. I'm talking big meetings. My mother still remembers him and had me add details into the book. She's like, don't you remember when he did this? Like, I could not make this stuff up. But here's what I will tell you, because people ask me this. How can you spot a bad boss during an interview process, right? Like, how do you know? And so one of the things I'll say is that he was disengaged. He was disinterested. He was distracted. He interrupted me. He came in late. Now, that's not to say that, you know, as long as you apologize, but like there was no apology. And in an interview process, if someone repeatedly shows up late, listen, I love a good movie trailer. People who know me know this. It's a movie trailer into the actual movie. It's a sneak peek preview of what it might be like to work there. And listen, I knew that. And that day I remember I had like 11 interviews. It was wild. And they didn't even offer me a glass of water. And mom was like, they didn't offer you a glass of water. You should not take that job. Isn't that hilarious? She was like, don't take the job.
Way to go, mom.
I liked everybody but him. He was going to be the boss. And so the signs were there. I take the job. The first day I'm at work, I go into his cubicle next to me and he's fast asleep. And I'm like, what is going on? And this was like so weird. It was like, and then, you know, I talk about this in The Devil Emails at Midnight. I was like, you know, does he have a drinking problem? Is he not sleeping? Is he narcoleptic? Yeah, like, you know, because you don't know. And no, he's sitting in the cubicle next to me trying to get a job. And I find out what his salary is. And I'm like, what the? Yeah. So I just, that to me, there's, you know, there's this famous quote that talks about the worst behavior you're willing to tolerate becomes the culture. Like you're, you know, and so then it's like, again, you're letting this person sleep on the job, right? Literally.
And I feel like you don't know because he's in big meetings.
Oh, big meetings. I'll never forget. These images, as you're talking about, you're reading the book. I have like images of these conference rooms and I remember exactly where these things happened. And yeah. And you're like, why didn't they part ways with him sooner? And the story behind, sorry, one thing on the story behind the napper is that he actually was a good performer. Yeah. He also became disengaged because he felt like he had been slighted in the workplace. Like everyone has a story. And that's what I try to say is that, you know, bad bosses are misdirected, misguided, hurt human beings. That's why we all can be a bad boss. Right?
Yeah. And this idea that he was so disengaged because he was so disappointed in the way he was treated.
Yes.
Whenever we're doing a big like session with a company, we always have to remind people that all of these things, every single thing that you talked about in the book, the microaggressions, the urgency culture, the disengagement, the micromanagement, all the things, all of those things are contagious.
They are.
And absolutely, this is the part that people want to, companies want to believe is untrue.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's hard to manage.
Yes.
And people want to believe that if they just meditate enough, it won't bother them.
Another meditation app. Yeah. That the company gives me for free.
Yeah. Like it doesn't work. You cannot stay in situations like this and be healthy at your workplace. I don't care how many things you do to take care of yourself. You can't fight against that environment.
You can't. You cannot. And I love the part that you said, it's all contagious behavior. It is contagious. And I've been the person, we talked about this, for whatever reason, things that have happened, I've become disengaged and or I'll say toxic. It's time for me to move on. And the biggest gift you can give someone is you might not meant to be doing the job you are today, but you're meant to do great things. And so to help them move on to what that is next is so important.
And it's so hard when you're in a place that's wrought with burnout because you've lost your self-trust, you've lost your self-confidence, lost your self-worth, so you don't think anybody will hire you. You said, you know, when you did this Get Out spreadsheet, it was a really bad market that year, and you were just like working it. That's what people are doing right now.
Absolutely.
Not great, not a great time to be looking for a job as a general rule right now, but if you have to get out, you have to get out. And you said also in that Medusa section, you said it took you 13 months, I think.
It did. Like it did. Absolutely.
It wasn't
absolutely.
Like you got a job the next week.
No.
You have to keep at it until it happens because you cannot allow yourself to be stuck in a situation because you're not continuously doing the work.
Absolutely. And there's so many factors. The market's being bad. What sort of role you're looking for, salary, all those things. And it gets more complicated as you grow in your career. And so
as AI changes.
Yeah, AI. So competing against AI agents for our jobs, right? So you have to just continue to work the plan, and reaching out to as many people as possible is so important.
Yeah. All right. The Napper is one that I really loved. The White Rabbit is the next one I'd like to talk about.
Okay, let's do it. So it's interesting when I'm speaking to a global audience, which I know you have, is that I grew up with Alice in Wonderland. So I did a big talk for a company where they actually showed a clip of Alice in Wonderland because not everyone grew up with it and not everyone understands the context of the White Rabbit, which I thought was beautiful. And it's a character in Alice in Wonderland who's always late for everything and has an oversized clock. And this was the boss, White Rabbit, who just ran around like chicken with their head cut off all the time, had this huge, still remember, Marc Jacobs, like brown worn tote, running around, running in, running out, people chasing her. Loved creating fake fire drills, the master of creating fake fire drills, deadlines that didn't exist, things that didn't need to start, but she didn't know what to do. So she'd start projects and reports that nobody cared about. The thing that was interesting was she also was a bottleneck and created the fake fire drill, meaning something's due on Friday, but she was sent the request 4 weeks ago because it's pretty complicated, whatever it is. And then it lands in our box Wednesday at 5 p.m. 2 days before it's due. And then you go down, you know, you scroll down the email chain. It was sent 4 weeks ago and you sat on it. But it is wild how when everything is urgent, nothing is urgent. Nothing is urgent. And this is just another example of being chipped away at disengagement leading to burnout, right? You're just like, wow. And there's a moment I'll never forget. It was like a Friday afternoon. And this is when there was something urgent due that she hadn't created, but it was the boss who cried wolf. Half the people didn't show up. Half the people didn't care. She can't even rally the team because people are just like, yeah, everything's urgent. I'm not showing up. And this was actually something the CEO needed to do at 5. And you're like, wow, people just don't believe you anymore when you say it's urgent.
Yeah. And the thing that I liked about sort of dissecting her personality was that often people that have this tendency, bosses or people in general, this is a really common burnout behavior. And most of us that engage in this behavior, we create problems that need solving and then add the urgency onto them because we're afraid. And you said this in the book too, in different words, we are afraid that if we aren't solving the problems all the time and we aren't overworking, then we're not valuable. We're not worth our jobs. We don't deserve our jobs. So we create all this extra pressure in order to prove how important we are.
Absolutely. You summarized it so well. And I think, you know, what's one of our greatest fears is that we become irrelevant.
Yeah.
Like whether that's at home or at work. And so that's absolutely, you nailed it. It's she wanted to consistently be relevant and stay relevant. And that was the way. And it was like the busyness badge. Don't you love the busyness badge? I'm too busy to go to the bathroom. I'm too busy to have lunch.
Like, I don't
I'm
know if you know busy. This, but the unofficial hashtag of Fried is pee when you need to pee.
Pee when you need to pee. Yes, I remember that. I remember seeing it. It's like, what? Yeah, I'm not embarrassed to tell you I have to go to the bathroom. I'm not embarrassed that I'm sleeping at midnight. Like, people, we're not AI agents. Like, AI is here. We've embraced them. We need to lean into being human and making sure that, like, we're taking care of ourselves so that we can show up as the best leaders we need to be. It's full stop. It's not more complicated than that.
No, and I think people like to make it more complicated. I had a client that I worked with literally showed up to one of my keynotes. Ended up taking a sabbatical. While he was on sabbatical, he realized that he has this urgency thing in him. Mm. He went back to work and told his team that they now have permission every time he's like, ah, to say, hey, is this thing truly urgent?
Oh, I love that.
Just that one question. He was like, I'm just giving everybody, because I need to be checked and I don't know how to check myself. This is such a habit that I don't know how to do it. And within 30 days, their productivity had gone up by 30% as a team.
That's amazing. And how amazing that he was vulnerable enough and self-aware enough with your help to do that, like just to ask that question. Because no, here's the thing. People will ask me, how can you manage up to a White Rabbit? It is really freaking hard. It's next to impossible, right? Yeah. The White Rabbit, that boss needs to say, this is something I know I need to work on. I need accountability from my team. You all coach me, help me.
Yeah. And if they haven't worked through the fear of becoming irrelevant or ostracized or left out or whatever it is, this is their safety.
Yeah, it is.
You're interfering with their safety. They're not going to get it. So you have got to make a Get Out spreadsheet.
Absolutely. Get Out. All goes back to the Get Out spreadsheet. Yes.
I just loved it so much. So that was another one that I thought was really important. Folks, like I said, I'm not going over all the different types of bosses. And in the book, Mita does an incredible job of explaining it in a story that's fun to read, and then going through the stats of why this matters. There's lots of big numbers in here that you, what was it, the napper I wrote down? Employees who are not engaged or who are actively disengaged cost the world $8.8 trillion yes. in lost productivity, which is 9% of the global GDP.
It's wild. I mean, you can't make the, the numbers are the numbers, and that's research. And it, you think that as a leader, you see that number and you think, I need to have an intervention, but this is what it takes. It takes courage. It's and true. One of the things that I include in The Devil Emails at Midnight is a question that a Harvard University professor includes, which is, what would it take to make you happy at work again? Can you imagine if someone takes me out to lunch and asks me that question, like snaps me back into reality? Like, this doesn't have to be this way, not for the company and not for you.
Yeah. I loved this question enough that that's also in my notes.
Oh,
word for word. And the full question that you wrote in your book, and I want Fried Fam, please, like, sit down for this one for a second. I want you to take this in for a moment and see if it's possible to answer this question for yourself. Because this is one of those, you might need to take out a notebook. You might need to put us on pause. You might need to pause us, send it to a friend, and then take out a notebook. I don't know what you need to do, but here's the question. What could change at work for you to be excited again about working here? Not what has to. Mm-hmm. Not what must, not what could change at work for you to be excited again about working here? What a question.
It's a really great question. Yeah.
Really great question. You said that was Professor Michael Murphy from
Harvard. Yes, it was Harvard. Yep.
University. So if you need a moment right now, I'm going to just go ahead, come back when you're ready and we'll be here.
Oof.
Yeah, it's a big one. And then I want to talk about, I am not a mother. So I'm going to say that up front. My people know that already. But I bet you know where I'm going with this. This one made me angrier. I was
furious. Really? I wasn't sure you would go there. I wasn't sure which one you were going to go to next.
I was furious during this part of the book.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Great Pretender. Yes, introduce us.
The Great Pretender. Had a number of children, female senior leader at the company, was, I would say, sort of the poster woman, where she's in social media, she's doing the panels, women's employee resource group, all of the things, work-life balance, work-life integration, wonderful. Punished me for being pregnant, full stop. I became pregnant and I was completely derailed. For a promotion. Like, it's so interesting. And I chronicle this in The Devil Emails at Midnight. Like, I was only like 3 months pregnant and then 4 months pregnant, and the cutting me out of meetings. Well, you're going to be gone soon. And I'm like, it takes 9 months to have a baby, 10 months. I mean, you know, unless you're really late, you know, it's like, no, if you're physically carrying the baby, and you don't ever make assumptions for people, you always ask. But it was wild to me. I think this is a really interesting point about biases we have about people. You know, certainly we've heard about men who will penalize women for being pregnant, but it can be anybody penalizing anybody, right? It doesn't have, so I think that was important for me to include in the book, that anyone can be a bad boss.
Yeah.
And to anybody.
But this one, I will admit, I have a confession during this chapter. I was reading it and at first, when she was saying, okay, yeah, but you're going to be out, so let's take this off your plate, and like, let's make sure when you go out that everything... So my first thought when I was reading it is, maybe she was trying to be helpful. Maybe no one did that for her when she was pregnant and she wished someone had. These were my initial thoughts. Until you had the baby and this bish kept asking you for shit.
Oh my God. And I did not set the boundaries. I did not keep them. I let the floodgates open. I worked off and on during my entire leave.
This is what I was furious about.
And I did it to myself. I allowed it. But also, we talk about this. There's power and privilege in workplaces. She was the boss. I was afraid, would I have a job when I get back? All the things you worry about when you're on leave. Yeah, it was wild. And it just, because, you know, I have memories in my career of people coming back from, let's say, a parental leave, and they open their inbox and they sit there and they hit the delete button as they're emptying out the inbox because they've been gone for so long. Great. That was not me. I knew exactly what was happening. I was checking email every day and got completely sucked in.
Yeah. And this is one of the things that makes me wild, because in this country, in the States, we are so obsessed with this being a problem. Europe doesn't have a problem with this. People take off for a year or two and somehow it's fine.
Canada, many other countries. Yeah, they don't.
Like,
it's wild. Yeah.
I lived in Europe for 13 years and I watched it happen around me all the time. And after 2 years, people would go back to work and pick up where they left off and then keep going. Of course, you're not on the same project. That project ended already.
Of course.
We get that.
But they have systems and processes for place, for covering people, for doing succession planning, thinking about me just going out for 2 years. It's not that hard. It's not that complicated. And yet we make these things complicated.
And you don't need to hire your best friend as a consultant and pay her double.
Oh my God, it's so ridiculous. I'll never forget vacuuming and doing all sorts of stuff while she's supposed to be working. Oh.
So this chapter absolutely made me mental. I was really in the beginning, I really was like, well, maybe she was just trying to give something she hadn't gotten in the past. And then I was like, this bitch.
You know what? I love that you brought that up, because I think it's a really important point. You know, when these moments have happened in my career, I always think, like, who gave you permission to slow down my career? Who gave you the permission? And sometimes they're from helpful places, people think. Sometimes. Well, this is what happened to me and I want to do better for you. Or the boss who said, you have two young kids at home. You can't take that job to travel. Who's going to take care of them and stop me from getting promoted into this big role? But even if it's coming from a good place of intent, always think about the impact and ask people, this is what I'm thinking. What do you think? What would you like to do? Right? It's a very simple question.
Your life. What are your dreams?
Yes. How can I support you? What can I do? This is what I experience. What would you like me to do?
Right. We come back down to basic trust and transparency that is missing from so many places. And not because people are trying to be assholes, just because we didn't learn how to do this well. And the internet has not helped us.
Yes, absolutely.
Right. Sometimes it's something simple. All right. I want to talk about at least one more boss.
Okay. Oof.
Oh.
Trying to guess where you're going to go. Okay.
You know, there's so many good ones right now that I'm looking at and I didn't decide beforehand. I might do two more.
Okay, let's do it.
I think the grinner and the cheerleader have overlapping qualities.
Sure they do. Yeah, they do.
Right. So let's talk about the grinner and the cheerleader together as a group, because these two are like, they're like so obnoxious, but you can't even...
Yeah. I mean, the grinner was the boss who was incredibly kind and completely incompetent, like knew my kids' names. If I was working late, would send a pizza to the house, like all sorts of things, and was just so damn nice. It was really hard to hate him, but he was completely incompetent, was in a role that was too big for him. And we were covering constantly. It was like propping up a puppet, constantly covering. I mean, managing up to the point that we're just doing the job. And it's, again, it's like, well, I'm not getting paid that salary. I'm not getting the same recognition and accolades. At what point? I mean, yes, I do believe in helping people in the workplace. Like, we should be helping each other out, but be doing someone else's job is a completely different story. And so, you know, it's interesting because in some ways, someone asked me, it's a little bit gaslighting, isn't it? And I'm like, yeah, versus Medusa, who was also like slightly incompetent, not to that level, but also was just angry.
Yeah.
You know, it's easier to dislike that person. And in some ways they still didn't take care of that. But in this case, but they're so nice.
Yeah.
They're so nice.
And they're doing all of the things that are currently big in leadership training. Get to know your people. Make sure you ask about their personal, like there's a whole list, like a check.
They're doing it. Check, 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 check.
Yes.
The grinner had it down. Yes. And then the cheerleader, similar, you would think, like, oh, it's like also always smiling. Cheerleader was like, actually, at one point one of my favorite bosses because he was super competent.
Yeah.
And like the corporate Pied Piper, and everyone wanted to be around him. He gave you recognition. He gave you accolades. He knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
And he also was toxically positive, positively toxic. It was like, he was like a Instagram reel. It doesn't kill you, makes you stronger. You can do this. You're superwoman. I know. And you're like, okay, the 10 things we needed to make our quarterly goal, we now only have 4 of those things. And yeah. You still think we can do this? And I talk about this. We had this cereal innovation that was gangbusters, and our supply chain partners told us, we don't have this ingredient. We can no longer make the cereal. Game over, right? And he's like, we can do it. Let's add $1 million to the forecast. You're like, what? And then what happens in my performance review is I'm dinged because we missed $1 million. And I'm like, wait, now I feel like I'm in the Twilight Zone. Like, what's happening? We have this discussion. But the cheerleader, that archetype of a boss in environments where markets are in flux is really dangerous, particularly right now, sitting in the US with tariffs and other things that are happening and impacting businesses. The environment has now changed.
Yeah.
Your team can no longer achieve the goal that you set out, and yet you aren't changing anything.
Yeah.
In terms of the inputs or the outputs. And that is really dangerous.
Well, and I think this idea, I think you said it was funny that now he's working on a keynote, getting ready for a TED Talk, leading with optimism to get the best out of your team. Yeah. I laughed so much at that.
On stages everywhere. But this coming to you soon.
Yeah, exactly. This toxic positivity is really dangerous in all situations because it is actively turning a blind eye to things that are wrong and missing, and not allowing any space for true problem solving or creative innovation because there's no problem to solve. You can't fix it.
Burying your head in the sand. No. Yes. And it's like surrounding yourself with yes people. You don't want to hear the problems, right? You only want to hear yes, 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 it's possible when it's not.
Yeah. So I've just one more. You're so good. Can we talk about Tony Soprano?
I was like wondering if you'd go there, Tony Soprano. People are.
I mean,
like,
we're New Jersey girls right now.
Tickled by that.
I'm here. I don't know if you're from here. You are from
here. No, I'm not. I'm from Boston, but been Jersey.
You're from where?
Boston.
Oh, I'm a Massachusetts girl too.
Oh, okay. Yeah, originally.
From Fall River.
Milford, Massachusetts.
Okay, see that? So we're both Massachusetts girls who ended up in Jersey, which means we have strong attitudes, sometimes very strong accents, depends on how much wine there is.
Yes.
And we understand loyalty and betrayal on a different level than most people. So let's talk about Tony Soprano, the boss.
Tony Soprano. Obviously, not obviously. Watch The Sopranos if you don't. One of the best shows that I've watched in quite some time. Ever. Yeah. And he was the boss who could kill your career with one phone call.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And he was the boss who demanded loyalty at all costs. He called me a rat. He was the talent hoarder. So you are in his team. You are in his family. God forbid you think you own your career. And you have an agreement that you'll work for him for a year. And then you try to start to network to not get out, actually just to move forward. I wasn't trying to get out. I was like, okay, I've done this for a year. And lost his mind.
Yeah.
Lost his mind. And did that to so many people. Yeah, so many people.
This is an important story because before you took this role, you were told very clearly that you would work at this role for 1 year.
Yes.
And at the end of 1 year, you'd be moving on to bigger and better things. And this was a stepping stone that was made clear that it was a stepping stone. And then he changed his mind because he's the mob boss.
He changed his mind. And also because, as someone pointed out, I exceeded his expectations on what I was going to do. So this idea of I was making him look good. Right. And so that's often what talent hoarders do, is that you're making me look good. I don't want to give you up. I don't want to give you to someone else.
Yeah.
So I'm going to make all the excuses, right? And again, agreements change. But what never happened was, hey, you've been in this role for a year and you're working on this project. And I think if you stay for 18 months or 24 months, you're going to be able to see through the impact and have that in your resume. Would you be open to that? That was not the conversation. The conversation was, how dare you, Mita, think you can leave my team? How dare you?
Yeah. Brutal. All right, folks, there's a lot of other bosses in this book to read through. And I highly recommend... I think one of the things that is critical for people who are burning out and why they should read this is because it might create a little bit of sense of separation between what's happening to me and how I'm responding to it. We tend to, the burnt out community tends to have a lot of self-judgment and self-blame and guilt for ending up in situations that are not of their creation. And so I think the benefit of this is seeing these archetypes and being like, oh my God, that's actually my boss. And oh my God, I'm not crazy. And right. No wonder I feel like this. So I think it opens the door to a little bit more like grace and compassion for yourself if you're in a burnt out place and you have a shitty boss. Like, I think this is critical. But what is your goal for this book?
My goal is actually similar to things that you've all talked about, is that I've talked about how to survive the toxic workplace, how to survive the toxic boss. But I sort of came to this moment where I thought, what if I am the toxic boss? And I've been a bad boss, and chances are so have you. Yeah. So if you can identify one or two bad behaviors you might have, which under pressure can get exacerbated and become a toxic behavior, and whether you realize it or not is impacting those you work with, those around you. This is a book for aspiring leaders, current leaders. It's all of our colleagues, right? It's like how we treat each other in the workplace. That's what I really want people to do. And I love the example of the client you shared who said, I know I have white rabbit tendencies, right? For me, it's micromanaging. Helicopter parent, helicopter manager. I know that about myself. And so when things are happening in my life, I can swing one way or the other. And if you have people on your team that you can be vulnerable with and say, I'm working on this, help me watch for it, that will make all the difference.
Yeah. So at the end of the day, we're back down to remembering that we're all human.
Yes.
Finding a little bit of grace for each other, having transparent conversations, which requires trust, which is hard to find sometimes in these scenarios. But I think this also goes to starting conversations that way, starting relationships that way,
So
that it's not so hard the further down you get. And also, like, everyone should go to therapy.
Stop mandating executive coaching. It's therapy people need in a lot of these situations. Yes.
Yes. Workplace. Yes. Is there anything that I missed that you were like, I really was hoping to get this part out?
I mean, listen, I'm so delighted you took the time to read the book. Time is a precious commodity. There's lots of juicy stories for a reason. I wanted people to read a business book that they could really relate to and then also think about how they could action. And so Devil Emails of Midnight, What Good Leaders Can Learn from Bad Bosses. You can find it on Amazon or your local independent bookstore. And I just thank you for the community you've built, and such an honor to be here with you.
I'm so, so thrilled that you could come, Fried Fam. I'm going to repeat it. Some people, if you're not an author, if you're not in the creator space, you might not really truly understand how important things like pre-ordering books is. It is an absolutely critical part of our success. And so if you have any inclination, an inkling, a little anything that happened in your body while we were having this conversation today, I want you to go right away to any of those places that are going to be all in the show notes and pre-order your copy of this book so we can help Mita be the success that she needs to be, so that we can have better bosses and better work experiences and less burnout. Mita, thank you again for coming
on. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Until next time, Fried Fam.
Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Got each other on our side, plus all the folks at Fried, the Burnout Podcast with Kate Donovan.
Fried Fam, if you've been giving everything you've got to your work and are running on fumes, you're not alone. Burnout isn't a failing. It's your nervous system stuck in survival mode, and you can't sustain your energy from that place. That's why we've created Unfried, a 5-month group coaching program that helps mission-driven high achievers like yourself rebuild safety, calm their nervous system, and recover in a way that lasts. When you heal, you don't just get your energy back, you get your mission back. We've got 2 groups of 6 starting October 7th and 8th. Apply now and secure your spot at katedonovan.com/unfried.